Evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Elizabeth, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Do we have any newcomers in the room?
Hey, Mike.
Welcome, Mike. Welcome. Anyone else? Hi, hey, Alex. Welcome.
Awesome.
Hi, Andrea. Yeah. Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome. We are glad you are here.
Yep.
At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask for those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will help keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on simple actions. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one, part two. Please welcome our panel, the lovely Aaliyah and Morgan. I will read the first paragraph on page five. And then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Part two, page five. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder. For such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did.
Right. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Morgan.
Hello, everybody. I have a sobriety date. It's November 15th, 2013. I have a home group. This is that home group. I have a sponsor who is aware that I am alive today, that I am in contact with regularly. I just a little bit about me is that I absolutely loved in the beginning what alcohol did for me. It quieted down all those weird fears in my mind that I didn't know were fears, things that I thought were normal. I thought everybody went through, thinking that servers at restaurants poisoned their drinks, you know, and had to sip it real slowly because I just, you know, I thought people were out to get me and I didn't really know what was wrong. I didn't really think anything was wrong with that. I thought that's just kind of what everybody thought. I was always on high alert. And, that is not normal, I've come to find out. The first time that I ever took a drink, I was 12, and it quieted down all of that stuff inside my head time. And I finally felt my shoulders drop. I felt at ease. And I figured that this is what I'm going to do in life. You know, I thought I found my calling. Some people talk about an imaginary line. I think from that very beginning, that first drink, I was just ready to go. I don't know what it's like to just have a couple. I've never been that person that just had a couple and could have stopped. I thought drinking was getting drunk. I thought that's what everybody did when they drank. I thought they drank to get drunk. It over time, what it did for me is it stopped giving me that ease and comfort. And all it really started doing was giving me consequences, I found myself in all sorts of treatment centers and detoxes, mostly because people told me I should go and because they told me that I had a problem. But I still thought that somehow, if I just manage better, that I'll be fine. Or that because I'm young, I'll just get through this phase that I'm going through and I'll stop one day and everything will be fine. Except I have alcoholism. I find that whenever I stop, I'm not gonna stay stopped. I'm always right here, like Bill said in this story. How did it happen to me again? I start making compromises. I did pretty good the last day or two. You know, it wasn't really that bad. You know, I start telling myself stuff like that. All right, it's fine. Like I know what I need to do now. You know, I'll just go out tonight and I'll stop tomorrow.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
You know, and then I just set the ball rolling again. And then I would have this exact same thought. I'm like, well, you know what? Here we are again. We might as well enjoy the ride while we're here. You know, I'm going to get good and drunk then. You know, I'm not going to try to just, I had no real control, you know, so why not just keep getting drunk? And that cycle just repeated itself over and over and over. So yeah, I think that's all I've got on. Yeah.
My name's Aaliyah and I'm alcoholic.
Hey, Aaliyah.
My sobriety date is February 14th of 2016. I have a home group, Westside Young and Sober. We meet on Tuesdays on Zoom at 7:30. We're a small group. We go through the steps in the 12 and 12, 12 steps and 12 traditions, and we go through the traditions in the 12 and 12. And if there's a fourth Tuesday of the month, we typically have a speak. I have a sponsor. Hi, sponsor. She's on Zoom right now. She knows that I'm alive. I talk to her and she's well aware of the chaos that I can cause in my life and the unmanageability that still exists in my life because I cause things. A little background about myself. You know, I woke up to this. This had to stop about a million times. I blew past them about 900,000 times. And it only took that one time for me to actually put things into motion. But I did learn that I couldn't take that one drink, but it was followed by not remembering why I felt that way and just go out and drink some more, party some more. There's another party, there's another event. I thoroughly enjoyed alcohol until there was just no joy in it. And, towards the end of my drinking, I was drinking, but I still felt the way that I felt. There was no more quieting of the fears or, you know, the thoughts that I had in my head. You're good enough. You're not good enough. You know, if only people would listen to you, things would be great. You know, no one understands you. I had all multiple, all types of scenarios in my head, and none of those went away. And those are mostly the things that I drank over. I had a lot of grandiose ideas that I used to drink over, obviously, because no one would listen to me. I specifically remember when I was about, I started drinking alcoholically at 15, but I do remember me taking my first like shot at like 10. My dad let me do it. And I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. I thought like, that's like success. Like success means the money, the cars, the clothes, you know, the rest of the saying, you know, and you drink. That's success. That's success. You made it in life. And that's what my dad had, you know. I'm jumping all over. Pardon me. I hope you guys can keep up. And that's really, you know, once I started drinking alcoholically, I mean, I was a star athlete. But then I wound up hurting myself, and then I ran into a bit of an identity issue, and alcohol filled the vacuum up. And so I remember thinking at a young age, like, man, this is not who I am, you know, because now I'm with the cut kids and everything like that. Like, this is too much, you know, and then go back out and I'm drunk again. And it's just like, there was no fight, none whatsoever. And I mean, that continued on for years. I remember by the time I was 19, I was qualified for this place. I like A1 prospect. And my mom used to tell me, you can't come home drunk. You know, you need to find, it was something about me finding a job at that time. And I made a plan, like, don't get off the bus stop in front of the liquor store. Go past, how about you take a different bus line so you don't pass the liquor store? Some way, somehow, I conned my way into getting on that said bus that usually passes the liquor store, but then they have another bus stop where it's only a block up, but I can easily walk up the block and go to the liquor store. And I would find myself doing that. And it's just like, oh, like, am I crazy? I remember saying those exact words to myself. Am I crazy? I thought I was the only one in the world. Nobody knew how I felt. There were none of you. None of you existed. None of you. That's a lonely fucking world. None of you exist. It's just me. And I'm the only one that's crazy. And no one will ever understand at all. And just letting the Hennessy roll through my head. Oh, well, I'll be damned. Drink. Just drink to oblivion. Damn what mom say. Damn what everyone else say. It's just alcohol to the head, and I'm off.
All right. Our next reading is on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge.
I love
self. You too. And I love what you said too, quick. It just reminds me, like, my ego was so big that, like, I used to think that somebody should have been following me around with the mirror. Mm-hmm. People should be documenting this because it's pretty crazy and nobody else knows what it's like.
No.
Yeah. So thank you for saying that. I just had to say that. It's kind of funny. So the answer, self-knowledge. I tried to go on self-knowledge. I used to think that, like, if I figure out the right combination, then I will be able to coast on in life. I will be a successful person, you know, like I had all these big ideas that I could never live up to. Mm-hmm. You know, and I did a whole lot of other stuff on top of drinking. Drinking's always what I came back to. That's the only thing that, you know, I always thought that I could do safely, you know? So I would go off to one of my nice little rehab vacations, 30-day stay, you know, and I'd be like, all right, so I see how all of that other stuff was a really big problem, you know? I didn't really have trouble setting that aside. I'm like, I know that's a problem, but I can still, or I know the drink is the problem, but I can still do this and coast on in life and manage, you know, get a nice job, settle down, you know, and mind you, like I'm going away to rehab when I'm like 18, 19 years old, you know, like nothing's really happened in life. I don't have a huge loss story except relationships. But I was never able to gain a single thing, from, you know, 12 years old until when I got sober at 20. It took me a while to get to a point where I really did have a desperate desire to stop. And I think for me, when I really did, and I was confronted with some sort of solution that y'all offered me here, you know, and it's cool because this is written Bill's experiences before, you know, we had this book, you know, like we actually have a solution to be offered here. He didn't, yet. Self-knowledge is funny. I really think that if I just get all of the pieces in the right place, that I'm going to be okay. And I always end up talking myself right back into it every single time without some sort of sufficient things.
Thanks, Morgan.
So my drinking eventually led me to New York. My mom kicked me out at 21 and I wound up in North Carolina. And about 2 months into my stay in North Carolina, I wound up in AA, the place my mom wanted me at all along. I wasn't taking what you guys offered me willingly for a long time, for a very long time. But I did learn a lot. I learned a lot of self-knowledge. I sat in your rooms. I drank your coffee. I helped out here and there. I cleaned your ashtrays. I mopped the floors and stuff. But, you know, I learned a lot listening to you. And I had a sponsor that actually worked the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He actually reads the book. So she taught me a lot, and it did relieve me to know that I wasn't a complete derelict, you know, like I really have, I have a disease, you know, and I couldn't really understand the concept of powerlessness, but I knew that something with me and alcohol, that's all I got. This is the bare minimum. That's what I got for you. It's something going on with me and alcohol, and it might be within my best interest not to drink. But I still did other things, you know? And she would just say, let me know how that works out. It didn't work out real good. Because I find that even when I substitute alcohol for mines with dry goods, I still actually want alcohol, you know? And so that's what I learned about myself. That was the self-knowledge piece. And it didn't matter. So here's the story. I was in school. My anxiety was really high. This was back in 2010. I was in a women's studies class. Mind you, I used to be a scholar. Like I said, I was an athlete, real scholar here. And because I didn't know how to school anymore due to the absence of alcohol, I was like normal, like regular people. And I didn't know how to associate with anybody or participate in class. And so on this particular day, I was really, really, really stressed out. And it crossed my mind. Mind you, I've been dry for at least 10 months at this point. And it crossed my mind that, you know, maybe participating in this other habit wouldn't be a bad idea. And so I didn't go to the, I went to some new uppity hip hop thing that was new on the scene instead of sticking to what I know, because, you know, alcoholics like new experiences. And I had a psychotic break and almost killed myself. That's pretty much what happened. And, but you know, I had all the self-knowledge, and my sponsor at the time said, "What made you do that?" And she was like, "Were you trying to change the way you felt?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And it was the first time that I actually had to think about what was going on in my day that caused me to behave in that way. And you know what? I was stressed the hell out. And self-knowledge, you know, like, oh, now that I know that information, thank you very much, you know? But it really didn't do anything for my alcoholism. I'm still me at the end of the day. I said all that to say, I'm still me at the end of the day. I'm going to get drunk if I want to get drunk. I'm going to do what without a sufficient solution. Just like Morgan said, without a sufficient solution, I'm still going to run the show. I'm going to do what I want to do. You know, there's nothing, it's not a sufficient. And so my life continuously get worse, never better. Not close chaos in
Australia. Okay, moving on to page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
We have lost the power of choice. See, that was hard at first for me to grasp. I really thought that, you know, I was choosing to drink every single time until it really did get to the point for me that, you know, I found myself not being able, well, I don't even think I was able to control it from the beginning, but it took me a while to really realize that once I started the ball rolling by taking that first drink, all bets were off. I was a complete question mark of what was going to happen. I was going to keep drinking until it was gone. Then I'm going to go find something else to throw on top of it, because we're really just getting the party started here. And, you know, and it would just keep going on and on again. And I would, you know, like I remember every single time I would go away for a little while, I would always have, I don't know how, like looking back on it now, like how delusional I was, because I thought that if I just like got dry from it for a while, that I'd be able to continue. Like I'm just hitting the reset button. Like I can start again and nothing's going to happen. That's really how it was for me. The first couple of times I went away to detox or rehab, you know, first night after a 30-day program, I, you know, went and had PBRs out of my sister's fridge, and she thought it was fine. You know, she had no idea what was going on. You know, and I continuously did that exact same, you know, if I just manage better, it was hard for me, you know, like it was hard for me to grasp this at first. I think until I was really ready to hear it, until I had really exhausted my resources left up to my own. And you don't really hear this a lot, I'm surprised, but step one is really a two-part step. Like I can say I'm powerless over alcohol. I can know that, but for some reason, I just want to try to control and manage it better. Every single, my life, my situations, everything, you know, and really when it comes down to it, like what I have is an uncomfortable sober problem. I feel too much when I'm not drinking, you know, all of those weird fears that I don't know where fears are popping back up to the top. And I'm like, oh, you know what? Screw it. Like, we're going to just go out tonight and have fun. We'll deal with all that other stuff later, you know? And I just keep it rolling. So yeah.
Morgan.
So, see, I never had a problem with the unmanageability part. It's the powerlessness part that took me years to actually grab hold of. This makes total sense to me. Like, because I never remember the humiliation of even a week or a month ago. Never. It never occurs to me. It's something drastic has to happen. Like, I remember when I sideswiped all those cars and then got into the accident. My only recourse was to duck into my house because I didn't want the police to come get me. I was underage, but I was still drinking. That didn't stop me. You know, the times that I've went out, hung out with friends, busted my head open, put my keys into other people's houses along my block. Those weren't my houses. I woke up, I started drinking again. Like, none of that deterred me. It has to be drastic. And even then, not for long. It really boils down to me. And for me, what I hope to be my last white chip, like, this made total sense to me. I think you're right when you said, like, I had to exhaust all resources. I had to be tired of continually living this way. Because I've been lost about the thought that I even had a power in the choice of drink is a false comfort. Like, I've never had that power. The times where I thought I did, like, oh, I had one good night. Like, I remember that time when it definitely is on par with, you know, what I woke up, this had to be stopped. When I first wound up in Japan, when I came back from Japan to New York, like, I was in New York for like 2 weeks and I'm just drinking straight through. Like, didn't I just, I had that drastic incident where it's like, this has to be stopped. And I'm still drinking. Whatever power I thought, I've never had it. It does not exist. I drink. It is what I do. You know, like, that is what I do. How do we not do it? I'm not interested in the, I want to part-time not do it. I want to learn how to manage to do it. Like, how do we not do it? Because I have, like I said, I have no problem with the unmanageability part. I have a list ad infinitum. The word is in here in the book somewhere. Like, I have a list of all the junk that I've done. And I can show you, this is why my life is unmanageable. But I couldn't tell you why I was powerless over alcohol until, like, it just come on. Like, I don't know. I'm the type of person, it got to the point, I'm just tired of living the same year over and over and over again. The same year. Like, nothing's changed. Every year is groundhog. I'm tired of being the ground. And so, like, I don't know. This makes perfect sense to me. I'm sorry if I'm holding us up.
Thank you. All right. Page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
Damn, we're just gonna get worse.
So much good stuff
I
in
know,
here.
Sorry. I know, right? Oh God, when I would hear this in meetings, in you know, one of my nice little rehab vacations, and I was just straight up pissed that this right here is telling me that there's a good chance that I'm not going to be able to drink more, you know? And if I sure as hell did not try to prove that wrong, you know, I'm going to just, I can show you all how I'm going to just come up with a new plan this time. It's going to work out better. You know, I'm going to manage a little bit better this time. And I love the idea that somehow somebody will control and enjoy. It's not just control. God, if I had to control it, I would be pissed. You know, it's like, okay, we're just going to, and I could even like break it down in my head. Like me attempting to control drinking would be, you know, like we're measuring out a couple things a day, you know, like it would just be miserable.
The Navy make you.
Oh, do they? That sucks. Good thing I didn't join. if I'm controlling it, I'm not enjoying it. And if I'm enjoying it, I'm sure as hell not controlling it. I will keep trying to think that I'm an exception. You know, that's the problem, that I am just so uncomfortable in my, that I just need a little bit of relief, and I'm going to just settle for relief. Yeah. Here we are again. Might as well get good and drunk, you know? I'm just thinking back, like, you know, in the last reading too, there was some stuff that I didn't touch on, just with how forgetful I am of the past, because it does seem like so far removed from me today. And it quickly did that. For me, all of my attempts at sobriety, going away for a little bit, all it did was prove to me that over time it was just getting worse and more and worse every single, you know. I had escaped going to jail for a while, you know. We used to get pulled over all the time, probably because we looked pretty sketchy. And, you know, the cops would pull us over, they'd search the car and not find anything because, you know, we hadn't been drinking yet, or we were on the way to go somewhere. And you know, we would get out scot-free. I passed out at the wheel a block away from home, ran into a tree, you know, pulled off to the side. I debated running. I really did debate, except people were coming out of their houses. Yeah. Yeah. It was a block away from my mom's house. And apparently what I did, I was told after the fact, was lock the doors to the car and threw the keys. They found the car keys like a week later, but, you know, somehow ended up getting just a reckless driving out of that one. I sobered up enough to talk coherently. And luckily that night I wasn't smelling of alcohol. And, you know, it was just story like that over and over again. You know, at the very end, it was me, you know, my one last grand plan, locking myself in the bedroom, because I am so delusional that I think that if I just get, you know, like 5 days, 7 days under my belt, that everything's going to be how it used to be again, before I ever touched any of this stuff. I remember very clearly thinking, if I just get myself through this detox for a few days, then I'm going to be my happy, joyous self on the other end, you know. Except just like it talked, you know, I start feeling better. Okay. All right. I was being a little hasty there. You know, what should I do? You know, I'm going to go hang out with some friends. And I realized this actually yesterday as I was talking at AA 101. I totally blocked this out of my mind, that like frail, emaciated Morgan Tomasevich is like trying to drop off job applications. I dropped off a job application at like Pizza Hut that day, you know, because I've got a new plan. This one's really going to work out for me this time, you know. And then I end up hanging out with some friends that the detectives were watching, and they ended up coming into my mom's house for me, for the kid that I was with, and I was greeted by a nice screaming in my face detective with a gun to my head. So, you know, like my plans weren't that good.
No.
You know, they really, really were not that good.
Not at all.
No, they weren't that good. It, over any considerable period of time, we get worse, never better. Every single consequence that hadn't happened was starting to happen, except actually dying, you know, like I had almost died a bunch of times too. So, you know, and that's that. I had to be pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization for me looked like sitting in Virginia Beach jail, butt ass naked in a turtle suit, you know, in the suicide room, because I was actually honest with that counselor and I was at a very high seizure risk. You know what I mean? Bright white lights, can't even have my glasses. You know, I mean, it was sad looking in a, you know, janky bent up metal mirror, not recognizing what I looked like, who I even really was. 117 pounds. I weigh 100 more pounds than that now. Okay. So like, I'm not, I really do think that I probably would have died pretty soon. You know what I mean? So like, I had enough clarity at that moment to actually realize that those people in those stupid meetings might've had something, you know, the people that were smiling, the people that seemed happy, you know, I didn't know what happiness was. Try. Would though, maybe it's time to hop off the ride. I had finally exhausted. I did not think that I was gonna. I had smashed that idea without even really knowing it. I just knew that I wasn't going to just figure this one. So yeah, I'll shut up.
All right, my favorite part. Well, it requires some action, but it's still my favorite part. Most people have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to admit he is bodily and mentally different from. I call bullshit. I admit that I am bodily and mentally different from you guys all the time. I'm smarter than you. I look good. Like, I do that stuff all the time. You know, I was doing that before I came in AA. I'm taller than you. You know what I'm saying? My hair is long. Look at my eyes. My eyes are pretty brown. You know what I'm saying? Like, I used to do that all the time. So now all of a sudden, I don't like it when it's negative. Let's be honest. I don't like it when it's negative. I don't like when you say something negative about me and it's different from you. You know what I'm saying? That's what I really don't like. But that's me, you know?
When it says it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless attempts to prove that we could drink. I don't really think that I tried to drink like other people. I was trying to enjoy my drinking. If you didn't like my drinking, that's what made me isolate. I wound up being one of those closeted drinkers. Like, I mean, I want to say I would use that term loosely. Like, some people knew that I was an alcoholic, but mostly closeted, meaning I stayed in my room and watched TV and got drunk. That's what I did. I watched Intervention and got drunk.
Yo, I did too.
I did too.
So ridiculous.
That's what I did.
So sad.
It is. I'd be like, that Joe, good for him. Joe got sober.
It pans out at the end. It's like, they left.
Yeah. 3 months later, they relapsed. I'm like, damn, man, you had the keys to the kingdom. Yeah. What happened? What happened?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Take another
drink. You know what I'm saying? Good on Joe.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to enjoy my drinking. I guess control when I had to be in people situations, but I didn't people really. Much. I was the isolated drink, you know. So I really just wanted to enjoy. But what my sponsor did point out is the word and, like, and control and enjoy, not or, like, control, enjoy. And then there's a third door. Like, I have a habit of creating third doors, you know, or like, you know, you say you can have this or this. How about I say I want this and this, you know? So like she made it a point to like point that out to me, you know? But I did pursue my enjoyment of alcohol. It would have been to death. Clearly I was insane when I came in here. So I don't even know why this is a redundant word. I did concede to my innermost self, like it was already shared. Like I, countless times I woke up to the fact that this had to stop. This drinking was not just a mere habit. It's not a to-do every once in a blue. Like I became a daily drinker. I was an everyday drinker. By the time I was 19, I was up to 2 liters of vodka a day on top of having some beers and some dry goods. Then I went down to North Carolina and that's when I started the sobriety stuff. And then I, gained a couple of months here, you know, but it was really just, I'm not drinking, you know, but then I learned things about like rejection and stuff like that. And then it's like, I'm off to the races. So, once I got into the Navy, I was back. I might as well have been 19 all over again, you know? So I was definitely, I couldn't enjoy it. I couldn't control it because then I couldn't drink it every day. I'm in the Navy. So how about just Friday, Saturday. Now I'm thinking about it from Wednesday. Now it's okay, Wednesday. All right, how about we start Thursday, Friday, Saturday, right, and Sunday. And can we do end Sunday? Okay. And then it's, I might as well be there every day of the week, you know? We go on deployment. I'm a hot fucking mess. We in port. No one can find me. I don't tell my chain of command where I am. I don't have a liberty, buddy. I never, according to all measures, I've never signed out of the ship. That's unmanageable as hell. But that's what I bring to the table. That's who I am, you know? And it just... I lost all confidence and hope in my situation with my drinking, that I can do it on my own, by myself. I even told my chief and my senior chief, hey, man, I got an alcohol problem. Can I go to meetings on the ship? Sure. As soon as we landed in Australia, my senior chief was like, hey, how did you do? Did you make it? And I was like, I ain't make it, man. I was out there. I was welling, you know? I signed off the ship for one day. We was out there for 5 days, but I was out all 5. That's what I bring to the table. And over any considerable period of time, I get worse, never better. Like my drinking will progress. I will put off anything for the sake of drinking. I will blow anyone off, pause, for drinking. Any obligations, anything. I will rearrange my whole life for the sake of a drink. And that's just because it's all I think about. You know, an active addiction. That's who I am. So yeah, that's all I got.
Make sure you guys are like fire. I remember when I was in the pink room at the Virginia Beach jail, I said, do you know who I am? And the sheriff said, yeah, criminal. All right, moving on.
Goddamn right.
Age 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they had prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew that from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
Funny, the cop told me, you know why they arrested you? He's like, it's because you're wearing a fish t-shirt. He said that was why. He was trying to be fun having it. I think I said some things. So yeah, this right here is saying exactly what Aaliyah and I both, you know, I might raise up a defense for a little bit. You know, I might hang in there for a few days, maybe a week. Some people can, and I don't know how, like sometimes you hear about people that are like, yeah, I made it 6 months on my own. I'm like, damn, you must have been literally dying inside because there is no way I could have, you know, I think the longest I made it was like a month, with absolutely nothing.
11 days without AA, no nothing.
yeah, that's what I mean. So yeah, I'm going to give some trivial excuse, trivial reason, whether it be, oh yeah, I'm going to congratulate myself because I've done so good the last week, mm-hmm. or, you know, that person pissed me off. I'll show them, like, hurting myself is going to do anything. It's so many little excuses for me to go back to time and time again. I need some sufficient solution. My own will and self-knowledge is not going. I think at the very end, like I actually knew that. I actually knew that I didn't have a new plan that was going to work. I didn't have a magic combination that would work, you know? But I did know, I'll say it again, I did know that those people in those must have been on to something. And I did know that I definitely couldn't do it when I got there, when I actually.
I'm looking at a note that I have in here. Thinking about that first drink, especially in early sobriety. If I don't snitch on myself, I'm good as gone. I have to practice. I need a spiritual program. I need spiritual help. And being new in AA, it's just certain tools that I don't have. Like I could say, I know in early sobriety, the Serenity Prayer was my thing, man. And I cut the clock up. Woo, pause. I cut. You're gonna have to edit that. I cut the clock up into quarters, wow, I need some coffee. that's what helped me, and working diligently with my, I need a spiritual program to help me, and talking to other people in the program. I cannot express this enough, how necessary it is to have a net. It's something I deprived myself in early sobriety. I wouldn't say I'll go back to early sobriety. I'll never say never, but having a network, knowing what I know now, I would not have had deprived myself of such a coming into the room, because it was just me, my God, and my sponsor in the big book. And some people that I spoke to probably 20 minutes, not saying that was insufficient, but I robbed myself of countless other hours that I could have been connected and out of my head. I've learned that I am in love with my thoughts. I admire my thoughts, but my problems center in my mind. And that's where I get tripped up at. It leads me back to that next drink if I don't have a solid program. So if I live up there and that is my problem, and I need a spiritual solution, means I need to reach out to you guys for help. And so it's actually still one of my problems today. I adore my thoughts. I really do. And it gets me into the most trouble. Step one is the one step that needs to be done 100%. And I practice step one every day. And it's constantly a crush to my ego, because my life has proven to be constantly unmanageable in a certain number of ways every day. And I'm learning that I'm still powerless over certain things every single day. But it's because of people like you in rooms like this. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink today. And for that, I am grateful. Thank you.
We have one last reading. So if you guys want to give like a minute response, that would be great. We're running out of time. On page 43, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. Momo.
Holy mental his defense must come from a higher power. Is that really what it's come to? All right. You know, this is where we're at. I finally, you know, I'm so grateful that when I actually was willing to get a sponsor and I was actually willing to work these steps and actually just take the action of AA, doing the stuff that's in this book, that all that stuff fell into place. Nobody said I wasn't forced to believe in anything when I got here. Like, I promise you, you'll have an experience by the end, you know, and that's what it took for me. Just, you know, saying that I will take the actions of AA, because that was something that I struggled with. But the funny thing is I struggled with that in all my previous times in AA by just sitting in the room and thinking I knew exactly what y'all were talking about. I didn't consult with anybody else that had been here for a while. You know, grateful for nobody forcing me to believe in anything. Very grateful for being walked through this to where I could have an experience to find something greater than me. And I'm very, very grateful to be here tonight with you all. I love you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. So I've learned that my defense must come from a higher power, and that is true. And how I could get in contact, like for me, building that in early sobriety was going to meetings, helping others. Read and call people. I just told you I had a real big problem with that, calling people stuff, reaching out to people. But I did stay after meetings. I spoke to people. I came early to meetings sometimes and I spoke to people. But I was told straightforward, spiritual program. It's going to be a spiritual remedy. And I mean, there was no other recourse. Like I didn't want there was no fight left in what you guys did. I think I'm stick and stay.
Thank you. Let's give them a hand. Straight fire. That's right. All right. We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. We do have PayPal and Venmo. We're looking for our little card. If you want to use PayPal or Venmo, you can see David after the meeting. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA? All right, great. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. We do have literature available. Please see any home group member after the meeting. It's right over there on the hand sanitizing station. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. please feel free to talk to any of us, or you can email us at info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside of and stay well away from the church doors. Bless you. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. Closing, let's give another hand for the... Thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to say thank you to Morgan and Aaliyah personally. And Ralph has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Thanks, Ralph. Okay, we're going to close in our seats with the Lord's Prayer for those who would like to join it. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.